his sister think.
In many ways, she was like my mother, made up entirely of logic and hard facts. However, unlike my mother, Nayarathi understood passions and emotions. She would no doubt shrug her shoulders and tell me that I should have been more careful. I would have to kill Kyair myself. There was no other way. I had to eliminate all possible doubt in the minds of my suitors. It would be simple and believable. I was already known as a violent killer. That would extinguish all the rumors. I felt a disturbing mixture of regret and fear that made me feel sick. I couldn't believe that Ripthi would even come to the correct conclusion without seeing us in the act of fucking. It also seemed out of character that he would speak to Alwar. Ripthi was garrulous, but Ubadua was the closest neighboring tribe and enemy. They had denied sending warriors to kidnap me when I first arrived here, but we all guessed that they had made a power play that flew against any peaceful coexistence. I could not believe that Ripthi was dumb enough to bring his suspicions to Alwar. Yet he had. I guess one cannot predict idiocy. Kyair and I would pay the price for my indiscretions, and Ripthi's yammering mouth. If only Ripthi had come to me first, then I could have killed him and put the matter to rest. Now that my father knew, it was too late for that. Kyair, Kyair, Kyair. I said his name over in my mind while I recalled his scent and the image of his shy smile. I did not want to kill him. I could not. I had at first been so physically attracted to his scent that I spent time with him out of simple curiosity and lust. But now I cared for the man. He saw me differently than every other human or elven I had ever interacted with. Of course he feared me. He was too intelligent not to. But I could also sense that he enjoyed my presence as much as I enjoyed his. If he was dead, I would have nothing to bring me joy and peace. There was nothing for me here but breeding with one of the slobbering morons and waiting around while their spawn ruined me. How could I care for children born of such a cold political alliance? And if I did love them, how could I let them go and move on with my life without them? I wanted no part of this. I could not hurt Kyair. There had to be some solution to this problem I had not yet considered. Escape came to mind again. The world was large, and while elvens inhabited most of it, there would be pockets where we could live alone together. Until he died, old and broken. Humans only live for half a century, my kind for at least five. Would my father hunt for me? No doubt he would. He would be forced to by the other tribes. But I was stronger than all of them. I could protect both of us and fend off any elven who came for me. Mistress? Reliada's voice interrupted my thoughts. What? Your suitors will be here in an hour. Do you wish to bathe beforehand? It is morning? Yes, mistress. I sighed and pulled my head from under my pillow. Reliada was correct. Unwanted morning light pierced my curtains. Had I even slept at all? I will bathe. She nodded at my words and then commanded my other female servants, who prepared my tub and morning ritual. I paid little attention to the process of my bath or the following effort my servants put into clothing me. My mind was only focused on Kyair. Too soon I was made ready for breakfast and walked into the foyer. Your suitors will arrive shortly. Reliada pulled my chair out and I sat upon the plush leather pad. Do you approve of the new table? Yes, I answered automatically. I did not give a single fuck about the table. A knock sounded at my door, and Reliada floated across the hallway toward the entrance to my suite. My suitors and Grednil were gathered there, and the beautiful woman ushered them in while thanking them for coming. I said nothing to the men while they took their seats. They normally talked amongst themselves, made jokes, or said other idiotic things in an effort to gain my favor or belittle their competitors. They must have understood the mood. None of them spoke. My servants poured drinks of juice, sparkling wine, and water. Then they set about placing piles of smoked fish, breads, cheeses, and eggs on my new table and onto my guests' plates. The men ate slowly, each glancing around at each other. Most of their eyes moved to my half-brother. Ripthi and Alwar must have suspected why I wanted to break my fast with them. Their scents betrayed their terror. The other males smelled puzzled, but none had the gumption to ask me why they had been summoned here. No doubt they wanted Gretnil or Ripthy to begin the conversation, as they always did.
"Thank you for inviting us for breakfast, Singleborn,"
Alatald finally said toward the tail end of the meal. He was the most soft-spoken of the group.
"Yes, thank you for asking us to attend this morning,"
Cusick said. His eyes darted around the table nervously, sensing that something was dreadfully wrong. I had only taken a few bites of the food. It tasted like dirt in my mouth, and it took most of my willpower to take a long gulp of the sparkling wine to force down each bite. I set down my glass and looked to the group. Finally, I cleared my throat and set my eyes on Vuma's son. "Ripthy, is there something you wish to discuss with me?" His eyes opened wide and his bitter scent grew by magnitudes.
"No, Singleborn,"
he said slowly. It was obvious that he was beyond uncomfortable. All wore his reddish skin lightened to a pale shade of pink, and he breathed slow, careful breaths in and out.
"What is going on?"
Bertalan asked after I stared down Ripthy. "Do you wish to talk to my suitors about something?" I asked Vumer's son.
"No, Singleborn."
A small bead of sweat left his brow and dribbled down his temple. "But you have already told Alwar, as well as your father and the chieftain. Are you sure you do not wish to discuss this particular topic now? It concerns everyone here." My nails dug into the maple of the table and left talon scratches on it. I wanted to rip the skin off of his face. My brother sat up in his chair after a glance from me.
"I would like to hear this."
Bertalan and Vuma grew up together, and the large man was probably upset that his friend had not bothered to inform him of this news.
"I would like to apologize to the Singleborn,"
Ripthy began. "Stop!" I interrupted him with a raised finger. "All of you, get your swords and meet me down at the front of the house." I had a selection of blades displayed in my foyer. I grabbed my least preferred one. An overly ornate weapon made heavy by an abundance of garish gems in the hilt that a previous suitor had given me, and left my suite. I would always associate this sword with Kyaer's death, and I did not want to taint any of my favorite weapons with the memory. I felt physically ill, and it took all my concentration to keep moving forward with the plan. I wanted to kill all of these idiots rather than Kyaer. The men followed behind me into the hallway, and they each dashed in different directions down the halls to retrieve their own swords. I walked slowly through the mansion, and by the time the servants attending to the main lobby opened the front door for me, my suitors had joined my procession.
"Where are we going?"
Alwar's scent carried a trace of rotten fruit to my nose. "Where do you think?"
"Isle Arathi, this is my fault. I made a mistake. I was drunk last night. I am sorry."
Ripthy walked beside me and tried to get my attention as we descended the grassy slope of the hill toward the stables. My chest hurt. It was just a human. I'd killed plenty before and never given it a second thought. Kyaer was different, but it did not matter. This had to be done.
"Behind us."
Alatald was the most observant. I turned my head and saw my father, Vuma, Zarmo, and Deluzit walking 100 yards behind us. He probably wanted to ensure that I handled this matter correctly. I stopped halfway up the hill from the stables. From here I could smell the horses, hay, and the smoke from the smithy. It mixed with my memories and almost tasted like Kyaer. I would never speak with him again, never touch him again. His smile would be lost to me, and I would only have his scent to remember him. The memory of it, too, would fade, and I would have nothing. "Ripthy?" I turned to the male. He smelled of confusion and fear. "Why don't you and Alwar get this human you have been speaking about?" I waved toward the stable to clear up any misconception Vuma's son might have.
"Yes, Singleborn," they said in unison.
Their voices shook, and their scent stank of rotten fruit. It was bad enough so that the rest of the males must have noticed. They dashed down the rest of the hill and moved into the darkness of the stable. "I'm sorry, Kyaer. I should have figured out another plan. I should have left last night and taken him away with me." My hands trembled. and I fought to calm the pounding of my heart and the scent of fear and regret that my suitors must have noticed. There still had to be a way. I could kill them all. I could still escape. I would have to leave everything behind, but we could be together. I am still confused. Fusik bit his lip and glanced back between me and his companions. Before I replied, Alwar and Ripthi emerged from the door of the stable, dragging a human between their strong arms. It was not my lover. This human looked similar to Kair, dark hair, green eyes, and the strong, broad human bone structure of his face. He struggled as they dragged him before me, and once the human was brought a few feet away, the differences became more apparent. He was more muscular than Kair, and while they shared many of the same facial features, there were slight differences in the structure of his face. The smell was completely different as well, and this human's scent was nothing like Kair's. It was familiar, though. I recalled it from 3 years ago when I first came to my father's home and stabled my horse. This was Kair's brother. It still struck me as odd how similar in appearance human siblings were to each other. Our kind were born with opposing traits to make family strong and diverse. It seemed like a more logical way to breed, since all the varying spectrums of both the mother and father were passed on to their young. Humans were a mesh of everything their parents carried, with almost no difference between each set of offspring. This was Kair's brother, I repeated in my mind. How fortunate! The dead gods must have decided to bless me with this opportunity to save my lover. I could not help but smile when the man was laid at my feet. My suitors would not be able to tell the difference between the two humans. I could kill this one and Kair would live. I glanced back toward the stables and noticed movement at the door of the smithy. Don't show yourself, Kair. Even when their death is inevitable, they still struggle. It is the trait that makes them so useful to us, I said to my brother and the remaining suitors. They laughed nervously but said nothing else. Kair's brother was muscular for a human, with a thick neck, veiny arms, and hands that were almost twice the size of mine. But all the extra flesh on their bodies did not grant them much strength. Even the weakest of my kind would be stronger than this man. My friends here seem to think that we are fucking. The idea disgusts me, but they are too proud to fathom any other reason why I have not yet mated with them. I would rather fuck a horse in this dirty asshole than bed you, monster. His sudden words of hate shocked me, and I felt sick and angry all at once. The words, combined with the green in his eyes, almost made me feel like it was Kair cursing me. I wondered if he felt the same way. Did he enjoy our time together as much as I did, or was he acting out of fear? Perhaps he hated me and was revolted by making love to me. I gathered my emotions and hoped the human had not seen the hurt in my eyes and taken satisfaction in thinking he had insulted me. I did not say you could speak. My fist struck him across the face, and I heard something in his jaw break. I didn't want to kill this man, but it was the only way to save Kair. He would be angry at me for slaying his brother, but I would make it up to him later. I would explain what happened. He would understand. Ah, so fragile. I stroked the side of his broken face, and then my hand found his thick neck. I would have never been able to kill Kair myself, which was why I wanted my suitors to bring their swords. I would have made them finish the job. But it would send a firm message to all of those gathered if I did it myself. At least his brother's death would not be meaningless. He gasped when my grip tightened around his throat. His arms and chest flexed forward and back in an effort to free himself. I hoped Kair wasn't watching me strangle his brother. Just stay inside, Kair. I'm so sorry. It had to be this way. A scream flew across the hillside. It almost sounded like the cry of a carrion beast, but louder. I directed my attention away from the blue face of Kair's brother to the man running from the doorway of the smithy toward us. He had a hammer raised in his hand and the thick leather vest of a smith across his wide chest. He, too, had dark hair and eyes that matched Kair's. "Kill him!" The words escaped my mouth before I could think of an alternative. Bertalan, Fusik, and Grednil unsheathed their swords in a single movement and stepped between me and the charging human. I opened my mouth to scream for them to stop, but no words came out. They could stop Kair's father without killing him. They could disarm him and let him live. I just needed to instruct them. But the words did not leave my throat. It would cast a shadow on the proceedings here if I showed an attacking human mercy. It was a crime for any human to attack one of us, even if we were killing their loved ones. I could only watch as the three men easily carved Kyaer's father into pieces with their swords. The smell of blood, shit, and bile filled the air. I turned my attention back to the man in my grip. His face was bluish-white, and the scent of his feces confirmed that I had strangled the life from him. The last action his body had performed was releasing his bowels. I let go of the corpse, and it fell to the grassy hillside. Sobs drew my attention away from the corpse of the human. I turned to look and saw Kyaer crouched over the body of his slain father. Blood covered his hands and chest. He tried to cradle his father's head, but the blood made it slip from his grasp. "Damn it, Kyaer, I needed you to stay away. I wanted to pull him to me. I wanted to explain." Our eyes made contact, and I felt myself float in the green depths. His scent overpowered the taste of blood and death in my mouth. He was in pain now, and I wanted more than anything to comfort him. Eventually, I would make him understand that this was the only choice that I had so we could be together. I tried to communicate all of this while he looked at me, but all I saw in his eyes was hate. I had to act to protect him now. If my suitors realized Kyaer was there, I might need to kill him. But if I could distract them and pull my group away without speaking about him, he could live. "Next time you think I am copulating with a human slave, I'll do the same to you. Do you understand?" Ripthi's eyes grew wide, and the stink of his fear combined with the urine that spread across his pants. What a fucking coward. I wanted to gut the useless fuck right now. "A human stable boy. I have every male within 200 miles courting me. Are you a fucking idiot?" My fist clenched my own sword hilt, and the sharp gems dug into the palm of my hand. "I'm sorry. I thought I saw you with the human." Ripthi's voice cracked, and the other men glanced at the ground nervously. I snorted at his response and debated killing him again. Of course that would anger my father and his elders. "Oh, I am already bored with this. Let's go do something else." I looked away from Kyaer and his dead family and walked up the slope back toward the manor. The men followed me.
"What about this human, Iolarathi?"
Bertalan asked. "Damn." I turned around to see the large male resting the flat side of his sword on Kyaer's shoulder. With just a quick motion, he could remove my lover's head from his shoulders. The other suitors had already begun walking up the hill. They no doubt wanted to be away from the stench of the bodies and the memory of the murders. Kyaer's green eyes were wet with tears. He had spoken often of his brother and father. Humans were frail physically and emotionally. I doubted I would have shed a tear if someone killed my father and brother. Definitely not my mother. I would love to kill that bitch myself. Nyarathi was perhaps the only family member I cared for, but I would worry more about revenge if she was murdered. Though I could not understand his feelings, I did want to comfort my lover. My heart beat oddly in my chest, and the ridiculousness of the situation caused my teeth to grind together. Would I get away with allowing him to live? No, not in the stables. I'd be around him too much, and I would end up putting his life in jeopardy again. This was my fault, all of it. I should have resisted his scent. I should have stayed away from him. Now his family was dead, and he would have to follow. I did want my father's plan to work. It was the only way I could have my freedom in this world. The only way I could choose my own destiny. Once we were powerful enough, I would not need to be a possession of the tribes that demanded my womb. The thought of the human army sprang into my mind, and an alternative fate for Kyaer collided with my other goal. He looks strong for a human. Take him to the barracks. They can use him in that ridiculous hobby army of my father's. My voice was a whisper, and I believed that only Bertalan and Kyaer could hear me. I do not know how much Bertalan knew of the human army, but as Zarmo's son, he must already have had some inkling of what was going on there. The big elven nodded at my order and turned away from Kyaer before I could see my lover's reaction. I had purposely kept my distance from the proceedings of the human army, so I knew little of what would be in store for Kyaer. I did know that he would be safer there than in my company. Perhaps the training or a battle would kill him, but it was a probability rather than an absolute. I'm sorry, Kyaer. I walked up the hill and tried to control the scent of my emotions. The wind picked up slightly, and I felt it whip my long hair around over my shoulder. It scattered my grief across the grasslands. The memory of the human would fade in time. I was foolish to make love to him. I would accept this failure, learn from it, and not make the same mistake again.
That was ghastly.
My father shook his head and glared at me once I reached the top of the hill. The other males were already walking toward the mansion. Perhaps they would be too afraid to spend any more time with me today and I could just sit in a bath. You wanted it to be convincing. I tried not to spat the words at him.
I appreciate your commitment to this tribe.
His words came across as an apology and caught me off guard. I don't forget my promises. I trust you won't either.
Of course not.
I nodded to him and tasted the scent of avocados on his words.
Where is Bertalan taking that human?
He turned his eyes down the hill. To your barracks. Every extra human will help us achieve our goals.
Excellent. Deluzit always needs more humans. Apparently they keep dying during the process of infusing our magic into their bodies.
Is the project complicated? How many survive? I tried to keep my voice and scent calm to maintain the facade of my indifference.
Only one in every six or so survive the change. Of those, only one in three keeps his sanity. They have a difficult time tolerating the pain.
I see. My vision swam and my stomach knotted. I struggled to keep my scent in check. Thankfully, I was standing downwind of my father.
Vertaris has been working tirelessly to improve the process. You said previously that you did not wish to know of any of the details, but perhaps you should spend some time with him. He has not been able to court you appropriately because of this work. I would consider it a favor to me.
He smiled and gestured back toward the manor. I will arrange a dinner with him. I will need a new smith and stable crew. Elven this time. I seem to have poor luck with humans.
Anything for my daughter, the Singleborn.
He smiled widely while he opened the front door for me.
Chapter 16. The O'Barney. Darkness and light. Darkness and light. Darkness and light. A sliver of the latter came through the tent and cut through the former. I moved my hand through it and watched the waves part at my command. I marveled at the detail of the skin on my knuckles, the flakes of dust in the air, and the scent of grass that accompanied the illumination from outside my prison. The light was wonderful and soothing, like her skin. The screams of the other humans were made in the darkness. They cried against the pain, yelled for help, and beat futilely on the bars that held their bodies down, crouched and trapped. At first I wanted to help them, to free them from their confinements and comfort them somehow. I knew their pain. I felt it in my own body. I had endured this pain and their screams for weeks now. They were so loud. Each cry sounded as if it originated right next to my ear, piercing my eardrum and shattering my brain with reverberating waves of pain. My own heart thundered in my chest. The movements of the other prisoners created a collage of sound that resembled the wind ripping through thousands of blades of grass, magnified thousands of times. My hands were bruised from clawing at the bars, as blue as Leotol's face after she strangled him. My fingers were bloody from scratching against the wood floor of my cage, red like her hair, red like my father's blood. I had done my best to please her. I loved her so much. When the night descended outside my cell, when the darkness was absolute, I spent the long hours examining the bars of my cage. Each piece of metal felt different, pitted and dented in its own individual pattern. I taught myself to identify each bar by its unique feel against the tips of my blood-crusted fingers. This little game kept my mind off of the overwhelming scents and sounds that surrounded me. It distracted me from the burning fire itch that spread through my body. It kept me from going insane. The manacles were gone now. They had chained me, forced me face down onto a table, and then it was all just pain and agony. It burned through my spine and brain like molten iron, straight from the forge was being jammed into each vertebra. Now everything was raw, terrible, and loud. Color and light seared my eyes, too vivid to comprehend. The taste in my mouth and the smells in my nose were overpowering, my senses too acute and overwhelmed with new sensations. I didn't know how much time had passed. The scorching pain had moved throughout my entire body, over every inch of my skin, as if it had been burned. I could do little more than crouch in my cage or lie in a fetal position. The elvens did not let me out to shit or piss. My legs were covered in filth, and the scent of it filled my nose with each breath. This was the least offensive smell. I was surrounded by the excrement and fear of all the other humans trapped with me. Their bodies reeked, their skin thick with their own waste, their blood, vomit, and rage. Those who died were not promptly removed, and the reek of decay overpowered all the others. Hundreds of cages surrounded me. Each one imprisoned a screaming human covered in shit. I wanted to scream with them, to drown their agony with my own, but if I started screaming, I would never stop. It was the path to madness. They were all screaming. The elvens walked between our cages in the darkness. They asked the humans questions. Most could not answer. They growled. They bashed their heads against the bars, screeching like crazed animals. They gnashed their teeth wildly at their captors. They were swiftly killed. Soon they would come for me. They would ask me why I imagined I was worthy of her. They would torture me. The thought of further agony cascaded through the darkness of my thoughts and made me want to bang my head on the bars like the other humans. Maybe I could kill myself somehow before they came for me, end my suffering now. There was too much of everything, too much insanity. I could not die like this. I owed my father and brother that much. I owed them vengeance. I would survive. The elvens had taken a live human out with them once. If someone else had survived, I could. I could pretend I was more than the animal they believed me to be. They would release me from this cage, and I would have revenge. I would kill them all. Especially her. The thought of her name brought her face to my mind, and I had to grab the bars to keep from crying. I felt her kiss my face and lips. I smelled her blood-red hair as it wrapped around me. I heard her voice whisper in my ear. I remembered her strangling my brother. I heard her command them to kill my father. Why didn't she kill me? My legs started to cramp, and I moved from my crouched position on my right side. I forgot about the corner of my cell where I had been defecating and accidentally sunk my left foot into the mess. A fresh scent of shit hit my nose. I grunted in surprise and then moved my foot to the other corner. Anger filled my stomach again, and I worked for a few minutes to release it. I was already covered in shit. A little more wouldn't matter. I couldn't lose my mind now. Water. I was so thirsty. I should have tried to drink my piss, but that opportunity had passed. My throat felt like it was nothing but one crusted scab. A cup of water would help me think. It would cool me. I wanted it. I needed it almost as much as I needed to wrap my arms around Iola Rothy and make love to her one last time. I shook my head in frustration. I wanted to strangle her. I wanted revenge. I could never kill her. Elvins were so strong, and she was the strongest among them. They all feared her. I did not know how to fight. I had never killed anyone. All I knew how to do was care for horses and pleasure her. Water. I needed water. My thirst burned dark red and scratched over my entire body. I burned with fever, but there was not enough water left to make sweat. I was nothing but dust and pain. The flap of the tent opened like a lightning strike, and half of the tortured humans began to scream louder. It was a crescendo of agony, and the brief increase of light allowed me to see that I wasn't in a mere tent, but a large pavilion that stretched hundreds of yards in each direction. The flap closed, and the screams grew louder at the depressing absence of light. Three elvens walked through the rows of cages. They moved to my left, and I heard them head deep into the darkness of the tent before the cries of my fellow prisoners drowned out the sound of their thunderous footfalls. Maybe they would walk by my cage, and I could ask them for some water, or some food, or maybe a bath. I laughed at the last thought. The only request they would grant would be my death. I would welcome an end to this pain. Minutes passed. Hours passed. The elvens grew closer. The screams of the humans grew louder wherever they went. The noise slammed into my ears and rang in my head like I had my ear pressed against my father's anvil. They continued through the tent, but there was too much noise for me to comprehend what they said. They approached my cage. I would try to reach out my hand to get their attention and beg for water. That was all I wanted. Subject B, 567, has been in confinement for... The voice paused above me, and the male elven leaned over my cage. He held a lantern in his hand, and there was a brief flash of light while he read something scrawled on the top of my cage. 37 days. The light burned my eyes, and I had to cover part of my face and clench my teeth together to keep from moaning. "That can't be correct," another voice said. "That is the date here. Are you both fucking idiots? I want them checked every 20 days. Do you understand? 20 fucking days. By the dead gods, we are losing them quick enough as it is. I can't afford for you two to forget about one and leave it to die here." The other elvens apologized, and I smelled the fear in their voices, tasted it in their bodies, and saw it in the dim glow of the lamp. I tried to get my mouth to form the words for water, but nothing came out. "You buffoons are making my job difficult. If you weren't my cousins, I'd kill you right now." The voice stopped, and the other two shuffled their feet anxiously. I was so tired. Trying to talk was taking too much energy. Damn it. I needed water. My throat burned like white coals. Thousands of daggers were stuck in my spine. My eardrums wanted to bleed. My eyes struggled to stay open. If I closed them now, they might stay that way forever. This might be my last chance to make the request. "All right," the elven in charge sighed. "Don't let this happen again. You might as well kill this one. The insanity has no doubt claimed it by now. We can use the cage for the next subject. Start making your rounds every day. Inspect the date on every cage." I heard the sword draw from a sheath. It sounded like a song, beautiful, short, pure, and full of the promise of release. I realized that my eyes had actually closed, and I somehow managed to pry them open and look up at my executioner. The back of the blade caught the sliver of light from the crack in the tent flap and bounced it off of the walls like a mirror. "Water," the word suddenly emerged from my mouth. They echoed around in my own skull. "Wait, did it just speak?" The figure in the middle held out his hand to stop the swordsman to his left. "I don't know. I can't hear anything over this racket," the other one said. "You dumb fuck. Your job is to ask them questions and listen to their responses." The center figure stepped toward my cage and bent down slightly. His sharp elven face was pale and vicious. "Human, did you speak?" "Water, please." I pointed to my mouth and hoped that the light from the lantern allowed him to see my movements. The words were agony. The movement was torture. It would be painful to drink, even if they did give me water. "Praise the dead gods. Looks like this one is stable," he said over his shoulder. He directed his next words back to me. "What is your name, human?" I cringed and tried to form my mouth around the sound of my own name. I had been practicing the pronunciation for water, and for a second I didn't remember the name my father had given me. "Kyair. Good, human. You've passed the transition phase with your mind intact. Now you will be able to serve us in ways you never thought possible. You should feel honored." He stood up and turned to the two that escorted him. "Pull him out of there and take him to the cleaning stall. But he is covered with shit. I'll go get some humans to do it. You are going to be covered in blood in a second. Do as I order." The leader put his hand on the hilt of his short sword, and the other two moved quickly to unlock my cage. The sound of the metal scraping against its parts made my brain cringe, and I resisted the urge to push my hands into my ears and scream. Hands grabbed me by the armpits and dragged me out of the cage. I tried to move my feet, but only my left one seemed to work. Even then, the toes only flexed a little and skipped across the dry dirt of the pavilion floor. The sudden shift from the bare, shit-covered metal cage to sandy dirt left my brain spinning. I was overloaded with too many new sensations of movement and touch, and I had to fight back the desire to vomit. The rest of the humans sensed a disturbance in the mood of the tent. Another crescendo of insane screams rose from the packed cages and beat into my ears like the slam of cymbals. It followed us from my cage toward the tent flap. I was dragged into the blinding white light of day. To my next life.
Chapter 17. Kyair. I gasped and spit. Water filled my mouth, nose, and throat like an iron fist clamping my sinuses. Liquid came up out of my face as violently as I could vomit, and then my stomach seized a few times more to clear any lurking water from my gut. Once I finished retching, I fell back against the cold rocks and closed my eyes again. I was alive. For a few dozen seconds I enjoyed the sensation of my breath leaving my nose and my chest pushing against the ground when I inhaled. My body shivered with the chill of the water soaking the clothes Jancy had given me. The shiver was pleasurable. Now that I had emerged alive on the other side, it reminded me that fear was almost always worse than reality. It was a close call. I must have passed out right as the tunnel emerged in the river. As much as I had prepared myself for the various trials of life and death, luck had always played an important part in my fate. I pushed my hands against the sand and got to my feet. I was on the bank of a river at the base of the Teeth Mountains. Mid-morning light crested the eastern peaks, but I was still in their shadow. The line of sun was a few hundred yards to my west and illuminated the emerald grass and the sapphire twisting river of the valley. The sight and smell of the surrounding wilderness struck me, and I took a few moments to appreciate its beauty. Malik would have laughed. I smiled at the thought of my friend. I was not the same man I had been in my past. I could not quantify the ways I had changed, but in my heart I knew it was true. My purpose had changed. The ovule. I mouthed the word silently and stretched my body to generate some warmth in my joints. I needed to get back to the castle. Then I needed to speak with Nadia about how she brought me through the radical without an ovule. I also needed to speak to the Empress about the research she had done on my history and see if she knew anything about my daughter. None of which would be easy. Talaxthi wanted me dead, or at least banished from the planet. I might be able to infiltrate the castle yet again and reach Nadia. Then there was just the small matter of saving the humans of this world from the elvens who had taken control of Naya. I had to build another army, infuse them with the elements, and train them. The thought of repeating that process made my stomach churn slightly. I did not want to kill anyone, yet it seemed to be my greatest purpose and talent. If I had not betrayed Shlara and run after Io Lorothi, what would I have done after conquering the Elvens? I wanted to believe that I would have fulfilled my promise to Shlara and built a family and a life with her. I could have helped found our new civilization, organized the government, led the newly freed human race to peace and prosperity with my friends at my side. But I had never wanted peace. I wanted nothing but revenge, death, and Io Lorothi. The destroyer wanted to break the world that had given him so much pain. The betrayer cared nothing about fixing it again. I turned my back to the mountains and walked westward along the shore of the river. After a few steps, I was in the sun, and the warm rays heated the damp clothes that clung to my skin. The sounds of the river, wind, and birds chirping nearby somehow made me feel more alone. I had no place in this world. Protect the ovule. Mulekana Teal's voices cast themselves through my mind again. I would find out my place and purpose in this life once I reached Nadia. It was a few weeks' journey back to the castle. I could devise a plan for the Empress before I reached the gates. The river wound around the south side of the abandoned town at the foot of the mountains. My elven pursuers might still be searching for me, but the river was flanked by steep, grassy slopes, likely designed as flood banks to protect the town from overflow in the rainy season. They were tall enough to conceal me from any warriors in the upper reaches of the keep. I hoped they were still deep in the caverns beneath the fortress, following my cold trail. I halted suddenly and dove against the riverbank. Something was wrong. The hair on the back of my neck stood on end, and my heart began to race in time with the earth pumping through my veins. I took a careful breath and forced my ears to identify the source of my alarm. I heard nothing. The animals were silent. I heard a scream in the distance to the north. Multiple screams followed in response, and a chill shook me that the sun could not warm. It was the cry of the lizard spider monsters. Fuck! I sprinted up the sloped bank to the first house and leapt on top of the thatched roof. From this heightened vantage point, I could see clearly across the small town to the switchback that led up to the massive keep. Fucking shit, I groaned under my breath. Hundreds of the creatures poured down the mountain. Their twisted limbs tore at the cobblestones of the street, and their sickly greenish-brown scales reflected the light of the morning sun like the river behind me. At the base of the torrent of lizards, a thin wall of elven warriors carried shields and spears, poised to block the onslaught of the monsters. There were fewer than 30. Three of the creatures managed to rip into the middle of the shield wall and devour one of the warriors before his companions could slay a single beast. Fehalda and Virnine were engaged in the fray, but the elvens would shortly be overwhelmed by the sheer number of creatures. The elvens held a lower position, and they had to give precious ground to the horde to keep formation. Even if the elvens did manage to hold the beasts off for the next 10 minutes, they would soon be pushed back to the base of the switchbacks. There the monsters would be able to attack them from all directions. The creatures must have been released from whatever magic compelled them to remain deep in the bowels of the mountain with the passing of the dragon. There were thousands of them living in the caves, and they would inflict unknown horror on the ill-prepared population of this world if they continued to spread on the surface. They were large, deadly, and smart. Two of the foul beasts climbed down the side of the road and clung to the bricks there. Then they moved laterally across the wall in an attempt to attack the elvens from beneath. Viernine and Fehalda saw their movements, and they screamed orders to their warriors. When the lizards attacked, the elvens were prepared and hacked off their heads before they could claim any more victims. It was already too late. Dozens of lizard spiders left the road, breaking away from the primary herd and flanking the elven warriors. I could not hear her, but saw Fehalda pause briefly to shout orders from the back ranks. I could see the despair on the features of her alabaster face as she lost all hope of defeating the monsters. She knew they were outnumbered. I pulled more earth into my body. It filled my blood, my heart, my lungs, and my brain until I felt as though I would burst. I unleashed it, as I had thousands of times before, a burning effigy of my hate. It was a globe of fire, twisted with purple and green. It sprung toward the distant targets on the switchbacks. When it reached the battle, the beasts erupted into a sticky, fiery mass of chaos that shocked both creature and elven alike. I followed up with another ball of molten flame that smashed into the back ranks of the torrent of monsters. They frantically churned around the burning goop that coated them, and others tried to scurry away in all possible directions, like ants whose hill had been attacked. My first two blasts had burned nearly half of the creatures. Another quarter roasted alive on the steep slopes of the mountain. I was careful to launch the attack to the middle and back of the pack to prevent damage to the elven forces, but my caution had left about 50 of the monsters alive and untouched by the fire. They attacked Fehalda and Viernine's warriors from all angles and easily broke their shield line. There was no way I could aid them now. It would take me 5 minutes to reach the battle. I doubted the elvens could last that long. I chanced a glance up the distant hill and saw that half of the elven warriors were down, the lizard beasts ripped into their thrashing bodies. I could not make out individual screams, but the moans and cries of pain from the dying of both species floated toward me on the wind. I was halfway there. My heart screamed in my chest, and the earth coursed through my muscles. I had to be faster. This was not an easy run. This was my body trying to destroy itself by way of my limbs kicking free of my torso. This was my vision blurring and my abdominal muscles squeezing the bile from my organs. "Stop fucking whining. Run, you fucking asshole!" My head swam, and I felt my legs start to cramp, but I had somehow made it to the base of the switchbacks. It looked like my speed may not have helped. Two sets of switchbacks above me, the elvens had been cut down to only four, Viernine, Fehalda, and two others. The group stood with their backs to each other and swung their long swords in a fruitless attempt to keep the last 20 creatures at bay. I jumped up and grabbed onto the wall above me. Then I braced my legs against the rough brick and leapt again to make it to the turn of the first switchback. One of the creatures was climbing up the next wall to flank the elvens from below. I grabbed it by the neck and ripped it free before I heaved it over my head. The weight of the monster surprised me. I knew they were heavy from our previous battle, but I didn't quite appreciate their mass until I lifted one. With a grunt, I tossed it over the edge of the small cliff with hope the fall would smash the creature flat. The smell of the burning monsters reached my nose as I jumped up to the last switchback. It combined with screaming of slow, dying monsters and the small battle above me to create a horrific landscape against the backdrop of the fortress. Before I reached the Elvens, I wondered if these steep roads had ever seen a battle quite like this. The Elvens had managed to kill a few of the last lizard creatures, but when I sprang to my feet, I saw that only the Empress's sister and my lover were still standing. Virnine's right leg was bleeding from a massive bite above the knee, while Fahalda's right arm, shoulder, and chest were smoking from what I guessed was a spray of the disgusting creature's acidic tail projectile. Several of the creatures feasted on the dead bodies of elven warriors. They may have been intelligent animals, but hunger was clearly their primary motivation, as they paid me no attention when I approached. I kicked up a sword from the ground and pushed past them to attack the ring of monsters that made ready to pounce on the women. My first strike beheaded two of the creatures, and then I slammed my shoulder into the next in line. The unexpected movement threw the creature's jump wide, and it missed mauling Virnine by a few feet and tumbled off the cliff. The sword was too light in my hand, but I used its speed to split another lizard creature in two, where I guessed its spine protected the stomach. There were a dozen of them intent on killing the last two elvens, but with my previous attack, the creatures realized I was in their midst, and half turned to face me. Rage and hunger was clear in the monster's intelligent eyes. Fahalda and Virnine used my interruption to dash a few feet away from the creatures and move farther down the switchback. It meant that their backs were no longer to the edge, but now I was separated from them by a dozen hungry monsters, and they exposed themselves to any creature that might still be alive and above them. One of the lizard spiders gathered up its massive legs and made a jump toward my neck. I spun to the side and lashed out with the blade. The edge caught the creature square in the mouth and split its wide face in half. My dodge carried me close to the small group of monsters feasting on the body of two of the fallen elvens. I risked three strikes with my sword, where I guessed their brains hid in their skulls, before turning back at the beasts that were intent on eating me. Two of the remaining five had their oozing tails pointed toward me, and I dove out of the way of a stream of sickly-smelling acid. I rolled across the blood-soaked cobblestones, and then leapt up over a creature that was attempting to bite my legs, and then slashed down on the back of the lizard I landed upon. The monster screamed and tried to maul me, but I twisted the blade around and felt it sever the thick spinal column, and the creature's rear end went limp. Two monsters shot toward my right side, their teeth-lined maws open. I pulled my leg up away from their bites, and a satisfying snap of their jaws assured me that I was lucky to still have my leg. I swung my sword down into the head of the closest one, but the blade was dull and dripping with too much gore. It dug into the side of the creature's skull, and it screamed in distress, yanking backward and tearing the hilt of the weapon from my slippery grasp. There was another elven body behind me, and I rolled back on the ground to avoid a stream of toxic acid. I kicked my legs up and floated to my feet as I grabbed the discarded blade next to the elven corpse. There were four monsters left, concerned with me. One was swinging its head back and forth frantically in an attempt to dislodge the stuck sword. Past the group, I saw that Virnine and Fahalda had limped down to the bottom of the next switchback, but they were still pursued by the other seven beasts. Virnine looked like she could barely walk, and Fahalda's sword dragged against the ground while she tried to pull the other woman with her left arm. I turned and sprinted back toward the entrance of the keep. It only took me a few dozen steps to reach the next group of monsters feasting upon fallen elvens. Some of them had already cleaned the flesh from the carcasses and were lolling around in a bewildered state of overfed stupor. The lizard spiders barely acknowledged me as I ran into their midst and kicked a fallen sword up from the ground with my running foot. I snatched the blade from the air with my right hand and then sprinted the last few steps up the slope toward the burning mass of monsters. Then I threw myself off of the ledge. Fehalda and Virnine stood 40 feet below me. The white-haired woman leaned against the wall of the switchbacks and held up her sword with an outstretched left arm. Virnine stood in front of her and swung her own weapon with two hands. One creature dashed at the legs of the pewter woman, but she managed to cut it down with a swing. She couldn't reposition herself on her wounded leg, and another monster jumped on top of her. I raised the swords, reversed the grip in my hands so the blades pointed downward, and braced myself for the impact of the fall. This was a fucking terrible idea, but the two elven women were short on time. One spider-legged lizard bore the brunt of my blow. The creature's spine shattered into 100 pieces like a dropped crystal glass. Blood exploded out of its mouth and eyes like an overripe fruit. The beasts were packed so closely on the road that my blades easily found homes in different skulls on each side of me. I quickly ripped the right weapon free, stood, and flung the blade toward the creature Virnine wrestled. She had dropped her sword and was using both hands in a valiant attempt to keep the dripping maw from devouring her face, while one of its overly clawed arms tore open her chest. My right hand was not my dominant one, and I was not very skilled at throwing long swords, but the lizard target was only 15 feet away, and my aim held for that distance. The blade spun horizontally for a full rotation before sinking into the monster's neck, right where the spine connected to the skull. I knew the attack was coming from behind me, but I didn't have time to throw the sword and then dodge. I did manage to roll slightly to my left, and one of the lizard spider asshole fuckers only ripped my skin open with a deep claw cut. I held back the scream and harnessed my anger by killing the first creature in front of me when I came out of the bloody roll. 3 of the 7 remained here. I glanced up while I moved myself between the lizards and the elven warriors. I did not see any above us. The one that had clawed my back raised his tail and pointed it at me, but I dashed toward the creature and sliced off the appendage cleanly, eliciting a howl of pain and rage from the monster. I jumped onto the haunches of another and drove my blade into the top of its skull. The muscles on my back screamed every time I moved, but my injury was not critical, and I could already feel the wound beginning to knit back together. The uninjured monster surprised me by feinting a chomp at my right leg and then really going for my left. If he would have been a hair faster, the move might have been successful, but I pulled my other leg back and sliced his wide skull from his shoulders with a downward chop. The last fucker must have realized his fate. He actually tried to scurry away with the hacked-off tail spilling sticky blood across the cobblestones up the switchback. I caught up to him easily and ended his retreat with a quick thrust to his brain. I continued up the mountain and found the 4 remaining monsters devouring one of their dead brethren. One still had the sword stuck in his skull. The weapon scraped against his companions while he grunted and tore into the flesh of the corpse. They were too consumed with their feast to notice or care that I approached. A few quick sword thrusts ended their miserable existence, and I sighed in relief. I turned back and met the elven women. Virnine had pushed the lizard monster off of her, but had not been able to get to her feet. She moved up onto her elbows and licked her lips when she saw me approaching. Blood soaked the front of her armor, and a pool spread beneath her prone body. Fehalda sat against a wall. Her breaths came out in painful gasps, and tears poured down her beautiful white face. I walked toward her, and she struggled to raise her sword in defense. "Fine, O Barney. You won, again. Kill me and be done with it." Her lips curled into a sneer, but it was obvious she was experiencing an unbearable amount of pain. "I'm not going to kill you, Fehalda. Can you walk?" "No." She coughed, and her body shook with agony. "This is eating my flesh. If you aren't going to kill me in victory, do it out of pity." She grimaced again, and tears flowed with renewed vigor.